evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, coming to you live from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Tuesday, October 22, 2024. An attempt by officials in eastern Equatorial State to impose a blanket tax hits a dead end.
So we did not mention taxation of NGOs, nor have we mentioned in the tax policy the routes which the vehicle can be taxed per a trip. It's indicated nowhere in that tax policy.
And Sudanese women participating in a regional bloc meeting say they want their voices to be heard.
If you look at the top 10 countries that are up there in the development index, these are the same top 10 countries that are up there in the gender equality index. It tells you that when women are engaged in processes, then you have lasting solutions, you have fast-track development.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A member of parliament in South Sudan's National Assembly is calling for deployment of security forces to restore law and order in Warap State, where tensions and communal clashes have resulted into a vicious cycle of violence. For VOA News, William Sunday Mabor reports from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
Majuk Dut Morwil, a member of the Transitional National Legislative Assembly, says South Sudan government should urgently deploy forces to restore security in parts of Warap State that are engulfed by violence.
Let him support Francis Marial to the full and give him the benefit of the doubt that he will fail. He's a policeman. He's a trained policeman. He will know his job. He will know where the rule of law starts and where it ends. If he is supported, and the support I need is a well-disciplined force, not junk, a well-disciplined force with the rules and regulations, codes of conduct, and rules of engagement, so that when they go, they don't dip their hands into the community property.
Morwell's request follows last week's swearing-in of Francis Marial Abur as the new Warap State governor. President Salva Kiir directed the new governor to deal with the insecurity that has hit the state. Marial became governor after Kiir changed his mind about appointing former spy chief Akol Kor Kuch as the Warap governor earlier this month. Kiir fired Kuch before he was sworn in as governor. Morwell says he believes in the new governor has extensive experience as a former law enforcement officer and could be an asset in maintaining order and stability.
I thank our president for appointing a son of Luanjang. We are backing our president to open a new page to revise governance. Governance is seen when an incident takes place. Immediately, the rule of law officer must be available at the scene, at least after 6 to 8 hours, when the crime scene is still fresh with evidence. That's where governance is seen, so that an investigation takes place, so that the culprit is arrested and put in jail, so that a court is formed after investigation, and whoever is guilty is tried. That is what law and order and justice is. It hasn't been happening.
The lawmaker is calling on the communities in Warap to unite in support the new governor to usher in peace and development.
So the Luanjang are getting out of their way by asking for an administrative area and appointing their chief at the same time. This is nonsense. That is anarchy. The appointment of Marial is a double-edged sword. Why? If he fails, it is the Luanjang who did not deliver. And I wish the president supports him fully. And what support do I want? There are those who have held out, those who could not listen to us. Thank God we came back alive. The guns are everywhere.
Warap State has suffered repeated bouts of intercommunal violence as well as violence between communities in Warap and in the Abia administrative area. For VOA News, I am William Sunday Mabur in Nairobi, Kenya.
Still in Nairobi, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development is calling for the involvement of women in peace and reconciliation efforts in Sudan. IGAD, like the United Nations, is emphasizing that Sudanese women's voices should be integrated in all peace negotiations in Sudan. For VOA News, Catherine Nambi reports from Nairobi.
More than 70% of the 10 million people displaced by Sudan's war are women and children. The member states of Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, say they are overstretched trying to help refugees from the conflict, which began in April 2023. Eman Dulman has been displaced by the war. She says displacement puts women at risk of sexual and gender-based violence, as well as increased maternal mortality since they cannot access reproductive health facilities.
The situation of Sudan now is very hard and very serious. For children under 5 years, malnourished, or mother suspected to delivery in the hard situation and unsafe situation. Now there is a high number of the rape in Sudan, children out of school.
The IGAD states are Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, Somalia, South Sudan, Sudan and Uganda. They have been having a special meeting this week in Nairobi on the role of women in building peace in Sudan. Victoria Anib Majut is the head of IGAD's Social Development Unit. She notes that women and children bear the biggest burden of the worsening humanitarian crisis the war has created.
Food insecurity is a major challenge, acute malnutrition. The health infrastructure has been basically totally disrupted. 70% of health facilities are destroyed completely. Healthcare workers have fled to other countries. The rate of vaccination has dropped significantly, leading to outbreak of measles. There is no access to safe water. And given the recent flooding, it has even exacerbated the condition, leading to waterborne diseases. There is an ongoing cholera outbreak because of the issue of sanitation breakdown.
Amina Farah, the IGAD Gender Program Manager, says it's time women are brought into all negotiations aimed at ending the Sudan conflict.
Often the peace processes that are inclusive lead to lasting peace. And as they always say, the fate of nations is dependent on the state of their women. If you look at the top 10 countries that are up there in the development index, these are the same top 10 countries that are up there in the gender equality index, which tells you that when women are engaged in processes, so you have lasting solutions, you have fast-track development.
Lawrence Kobandi is the IGAD Special Envoy to Sudan. He says research indicates that peace agreements reached with the participation of women are more likely to endure.
This inclusion is not just a moral obligation. It is a practical strategy for success. Therefore, we must advocate for women's rightful place at the negotiation table, not as passive participants, but as active leaders whose contributions are essential to healing Sudan.
The United Nations says the war in Sudan has led to the world's worst hunger and displacement crisis, with some areas in the Darfur region facing famine. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Nairobi.
Still on Sudan, the mystery surrounding a crashed cargo plane purportedly downed by Sudan's paramilitary rapid support forces has deepened as authorities insist the aircraft had been deregistered in Kazakhstan. Just who was flying the Ilyushin IL-76 at night over Darfur remains in question. The aircraft was previously linked to an effort by the United Arab Emirates to arm the RSF, which the UAE has denied. The Associated Press reports that mobile phone footage posted online shows RSF fighters among the plane's burning wreckage, claiming they shot it down with a surface-to-air missile. Identity documents shown included a Russian passport and an ID linked to a UAE-based company whose phone numbers was disconnected. The Russian embassy in Sudan since Monday has been investigating. The RSF say the aircraft belonged to the Sudanese military and had been operated by jihadist militia groups. It says it collected the aircraft's black box along with crucial documents and intelligence revealing the aircraft's operations that it did not publish. Eastern Equatoria State's Road and Bridges Ministry plans to impose new taxes on road users entering the state. However, the state government has not approved the fees, and the measure appears to have stalled. For VOA, Kaltuma Vanessa reports from Torit.
The Ministry of Roads and Bridges in Eastern Equatorial State issued a circular earlier this month to setting out new taxes on vehicles entering all the state counties. The state government, however, has not approved the measures. Elia John Alhaj, State Minister of Information and the spokesperson for Eastern Equatorial State, says the Ministry of Road and Bridges did not consult other government institutions about the new tax orders.
That letter is originating from the ministry, but what actually prompted that ministry to write that letter is misinterpretation of the state laws. What we are aware, there was a tax harmonization policy which was tabled in the Council of Ministers and taken to the state legislative assembly, and it was passed. So the director concerned went and misinterpreted some of the provision within that tax rate policy and start circulating. So we did not mention taxation of NGOs, nor have we mentioned in the tax policy the routes which the vehicle can be taxed per a trip. It's indicated nowhere in that tax policy. These are just misinterpretation of state laws.
Elias says the state government has not approved any directives to tax vehicles entering the state counties.
The government of Eastern Equatorial State refuted and distanced itself from that letter. That letter is an individual letter. It was originating from the State Ministry of Transport, Road and Bridges, written by the Director General. So in that extraordinary council meeting number 6, dated 19 October 2024, The state secretariat, the meeting chaired by His Excellency the Governor, Louis Lobon Lejore, the Council of Ministers categorically refuted and distanced itself from the content of the aforementioned letter. It is important to clarify that this issue was never discussed nor passed as a resolution by the Council of Ministers.
James Silvioli offers transportation service in Torit. He already pays for his license and his certificate of operation. He says drivers would likely increase fares to cover the new road tax if it goes into force, and that would push businesses to raise prices in markets across the state.
I pay tax to the revenue authority every year, and this tax is renewed every year and has been increasing. The government cannot again tax. If they want to tax, let them create vehicle parking for us.
One trader who did not want to give his name for fear of government reprisal also said that imposing taxes on commercial vehicles could force traders to increase prices for their goods. VOA could not reach the Minister of Roads and Bridges or the Ministry's Director General for comment on the taxation directives. However, in the order for the taxes, the Ministry Director General Norman Gideon said the revenue would be used to promote the state economy. The Danish Institution for International Studies has said checkpoint taxes make South Sudan one of the most expensive places to move goods. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa reporting from Eastern Equatorial State Capital Torit.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Cameroonian President Paul Biya disappears and reappears again. Find out how after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Thousands gathered Monday on the streets of Yaounde, fighting for a position to catch a glimpse of Cameroon's long absent leader, Paul Biya. Rumors about the death of the 91-year-old president spread across the country after he disappeared from the public view for over a month following an official visit to China. Muki Edwin Kinzika has more from Yaounde.
Thank you very much and a warm welcome.
Cameroon State Radio says President Paul Biya, a few of his close advisors and his wife Chantal Biya are back in Yaounde after spending close to 50 days outside the Central African state. Biya's return was also broadcast live on state television, which showed thousands of people gathered at major junctions near Yaounde Simalen International Airport, where Biya landed. 35-year-old chemistry teacher Mbang Boniface was among the throngs of civilians, many of whom were anxious about his mysterious absence. He says he is surprised that the Cameroon government gave so much importance to Biya's return without telling civilians where the president was.
We just wake up one morning to see this huge mobilization of workers, students, to receive somebody we've not known where he was. And this not only slows down economic activity, but slows down productivity. The citizens are worried if the president who is coming in is in good health or not. It's a shame.
Civilians said there was a huge military presence in Cameroon's capital when Biya arrived. The military said government troops were deployed to maintain peace and order, while soldiers of the Presidential Guard protected Biya personally as tradition holds. Hundreds of Biya's pictures with messages welcoming him back home were visible at several road junctions. Biya, who looked old but strong, spoke with his advisors at the airport for about 6 minutes before leaving for Cameroon's presidential palace in a motorcade heavily protected by forces of the Presidential Guard. Media outlets said they were surprised that Biya neither spoke with journalists nor made a statement about his protracted disappearance and rumored death. Fru Jonathan is a member of Biya's ruling Cameroon People's Democratic Movement Party and a close collaborator of Biya. He called media reports that civilians were either hired or intimidated to turn out en masse to welcome Biya as unfounded.
Cameroonians in a vast majority love their president. After the wild rumors that circulated, our people are happy to hear that President Paul Biya is coming back strong and that he has been walking out there and that he's coming back to continue his duties in the country. Our wish is that President Paul Biya should continue to be healthy.
Supporters of the opposition Cameroonian Party for National Reconciliation, or CPNR, turned out to chant slogans telling Biya that he is old and should hand over power. The 92-year-old Biya has been Cameroon's president for more than four decades. He left the Central African state on September 4 for the Africa-China Forum. After departing China on September 8, he hadn't been seen in public for more than a month, triggering speculation in news reports and social media posts that he might have died. During that time, Cameroon's government said Biya was in excellent health and working for the country's development in Geneva. The government says his plane left Geneva for Yaounde on Monday. Moki Edwin Kinzika, VOA News, Yaounde.
From Yaounde, we move to U.S. After becoming the first U.S. president to reach the age of 100, Jimmy Carter was able to fulfill a wish that he had expressed to his family. VOA's Ken Farabaugh has more from Georgia.
Philip Kurland is surrounded by politics.
These are the top two selling buttons.
If there is a button or badge supporting a political candidate, chances are Kurland has it.
We're the largest retail political memorabilia dealer in the United States.
Kurland's store isn't just any ordinary shop in the country. It's the Plains Trading Post, as in Plains, Georgia, the hometown of former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, where the streets are lined with signs from the current election supporting both Democrat Kamala Harris and Republican Donald Trump. Democrat Joe Biden won Sumter County and narrowly won the state of Georgia in 2020.
It's shocking in a way that we're a battleground state.
Polls show a close race in Georgia, and both campaigns recognize every vote counts, including a prominent one cast by mail-in ballot from the most famous resident of Plains.
I don't think he'd miss any opportunity to vote.
He was excited to turn 100, but he's more excited to cast his ballot for Vice President Harris.
Jason Carter, Jimmy Carter's grandson, is chairman of the board of the former president's global nonprofit, Carter Center.
At the end of his 100-year life, that is continuing on, as we know, to have grown up in the segregated South and for his one of his last political acts to be helping to elect a black woman as a president, I do think it would be important.
President Carter has already said that it was important for him to be able to vote for Barack Obama in 2008.
Joe Crespino is a professor of history at Emory University. He believes Carter's vote is connected to his legacy, specifically his efforts to get the Equal Rights Amendment prohibiting sex discrimination ratified in the U.S. Senate while president.
But voting for the first female candidate of color would be important for him, not only because of his experiences with race over the course of his life, but also his experiences in trying to advance the interests of women in public life.
He wants to see this country brought back together. I think he wants to reduce that polarization. I think he wants us to focus on the things that make us Americans first and fundamentally. And I think that he thinks she can do that.
And I must have 1,100 different Carter buttons.
Philip Kurland says not everyone in Plains agrees with Jimmy Carter or his candidate of choice.
Even though he's firmly come out for Kamala Harris, everyone that's not for her would instantly forgive him and still love him.
As Election Day nears, Jimmy Carter continues to receive hospice care in his modest home on the edge of his hometown, not far from the preserved Depression-era farm where his story began 100 years ago. Kane Faribault, VOA News, Plains, Georgia.
From Georgia, we move to Europe, where many European Union countries are calling for the bloc to clamp down on migration amid a surge in support for right-wing political parties. But Spain is insisting Europe's aging population needs controlled migration to boost its economy. Henry Ridgewell reports.
More than 42,000 irregular migrants have arrived in Spain so far this year, a two-thirds increase from 2023. Most arrive on Spain's Canary Islands, more than 100 kilometres from the African coastline. Last year alone, around 6,000 migrants died attempting the crossing, according to human rights groups. But for many, the dangers are outweighed by the dream of a new life in Europe. 22-year-old Masire Conare arrived in Spain from Mali.
If you make it here, the only thing you have to do is go to class, to keep learning, to talk to people. You have to be an open person, especially as an immigrant. You have to make a double effort, and that's what we're doing now.
For the migrants, there is hope of a better life. The Spanish government also sees economic potential. Like many Western countries, Spain's population is aging fast. It desperately needs young workers to build the economy and pay taxes. But the country's birth rate last year hit its lowest level ever recorded, at under 1.2, among the lowest in Europe. Speaking at a European Union leaders' summit Thursday, Spain's Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez said immigration is vital.
Our present and future competitiveness, the economic growth of our country, the sustainability of our welfare model also depends on migration. We must manage migration flows from the perspective of a demographic challenge.
But amid a rise in support for far-right parties across Europe, many EU member states want tougher migration controls. Striking a balance won't be easy. Jesus Verdu Baeza is an associate professor of law at the University of Cadiz.
We are a country with strong values, and we want this balance between controlling migration and offering asylum seekers a legal way to enter and to respect their rights. We need them. Here in Spain, without migrants, we have no fruits on the supermarkets. Possibly the economy simply could not function properly. We need migrants.
As part of its new approach, Spain is drafting a strategy for Africa, focusing on what it describes as the economic and social transformation of the continent. While seeking to facilitate legal migration, Spain is trying to stop irregular migrants arriving on its shores. It wants the EU's border agency Frontex to seek permission to patrol African coastlines to intercept the migrant boats. Many migrants are traumatized by the journey. 21-year-old Ahmed Karab is from Morocco.
I want to give some advice to my countrymen and my friends. Don't come in a small boat because they are very dangerous.
Spain wants a long-term solution to migration that works for Africa and for Europe. But the hope of a better life continues to draw tens of thousands of people across these dangerous seas. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today...
What is the best advice you have ever gotten?
I got an advice from my mom. She encouraged me to work hard. That she told me a very successful woman is a very hardworking woman.
The great one I can remember is the one my father gave to me to study hard. Actually, he was on his deathbed. He was so ill. He had a stroke and he was so helpless. He couldn't do anything for me. That was the last day I even saw him. It was like, my son, study hard.
Is from my father. He has always told me that I shouldn't be afraid to learn new things and to take up new challenges, because he said that you're only afraid to take up new challenges when you haven't tried it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
That's all from us this Tuesday, October 22nd, 2024. We now leave you with Ahmed Bremer and the song Juba Alish. We've been listening to Ahmed Bremer and the song Juba Alish. For more on our programs, visit www.voaafrica.com. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Rob Macklin, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
العيس جوب الحنان